Al Gore is this country's foremost environmental leader, speaking out on issues time and time again, always before anyone else. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my great pleasure to introduce to you Vice President Al Gore.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, my friends. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Carol, and thank you, Joan, and thank you, Peter, and I want to thank all of you for coming here today on the coldest day of the year to talk about global warming. What better time to talk about global warming? I do want to say that it was an honor to work with Carol Browner on environmental policies in the last administration, and I'm very grateful for her outstanding leadership of Environment 2004. I want to thank Peter for his great work as executive director of MoveOn.org, and I appreciate all of those who have worked in the trenches with both of these great organizations that are co-sponsoring today's speech. And allow me to please say a special word about Joan Blades, who traveled, as Peter did, from California for this event. And Joan, along with her husband, Wes Boyd, is the co-founder of MoveOn.org, and she has been from the beginning a moving force behind the emergence of this dynamic new grassroots movement in American democracy. It's a great, great development. I want to introduce my wife, Tipper, who is here, and my daughter, Corinna, and my son-in-law, Drew Schiff, and Lisa Schiff. All right, now, I have made a series of speeches about the policies of the Bush-Cheney administration toward the major challenges that confront America. National security, economic policy, civil liberties, and today, the environment. Now, for me, this issue is in a special category because I believe so much is at stake. I don't want to proselytize, but my own religious faith has played a role in my strong feelings about this issue. But I think all of us, from whatever point of view we begin thinking about the environment, put it in a special category. And I'm particularly concerned about this issue because the vast majority of the most respected environmental scientists from all over the world have sounded a clear and urgent alarm. The international community, including the United States, began a massive effort several years ago to assemble the most accurate scientific assessment of the growing evidence that the Earth's environment is now sustaining severe and potentially irreparable damage from the unprecedented accumulation of pollution in the global atmosphere. In essence, these scientists are telling the people of every nation that global warming caused by human activities is becoming a serious threat to our common future. I'm also troubled that the Bush-Cheney administration does not seem to hear the warnings of the scientific community in the same way that most of us do. I don't say that in a humorous way. They look at it and hear it differently than the majority of Americans. And so I want to show a few pictures today. This first, just to start with a grounding in what we're really talking about here. This picture is the first image that any of us ever saw of the Earth. It was taken on Christmas Eve in 1968 by a young astronaut named Bill Anders on the mission of Apollo 8 when Frank Borman was the pilot. They didn't land on the moon, but it was the first one to go around the moon. And this picture is called Earthrise. And it was given a lot of the credit for beginning the modern environmental movement. When this picture was first seen, it caused a dramatic change in the way people thought about our planet. On the following day in the New York Times, the poet Archibald MacLeish wrote, "To see the Earth as it truly is, small and blue and beautiful in that eternal silence where it floats, is to see ourselves as riders on the Earth together." This next picture was taken on the last of the Apollo missions, Apollo 17, on December 11, 1972, partway between the Earth and the Moon, with the Sun directly behind the spacecraft. And this is the most published photograph in all of history. 99 times out of 100, when you see a picture of the Earth in a newspaper or an advertisement, it is this exact picture. And because it's Northern Hemisphere winter, Antarctica is tilted toward the Sun. Africa and the Sinai are prominent in this picture. Now, the next one I'm going to show you is hardly ever seen. It's a film. It's the only home movie we have of the Earth. When the Galileo spacecraft was leaving the Earth to go out and explore the universe, it turned its cameras back on our planet and captured 22 hours of the Earth rotating. It speeded up into just 20 some odd seconds, but it's beautiful. The next few pictures are unique in a different way. They are made up of 3,000 separate satellite photographs taken over a three-year period, carefully selected to give a cloud-free view of every square inch of the Earth. Both hemispheres are in summer simultaneously, and North America is the last of these. And even though the Earth is of such a vast size, it's important to remember that the most vulnerable part of the global environment is the atmosphere, because it is surprisingly thin, as my friend the late Carl Sagan used to say, like a coat of varnish on a globe. From here to the top of the sky is not as far as it is out to LaGuardia Airport. And as a consequence, it is possible for our civilization to fill up that relatively small space with greenhouse gases. Now, don't spend any time on this one, because this is the way the technical explanation is given of the greenhouse effect, with the sun's rays coming in and they radiate back out, and some of them are trapped, and that's a good thing. But when the greenhouse gases thicken it, they're trapped more, and that heats it up, and that's bad. This is a much better explanation.
Global warming, or none like it hot. You're probably wondering why your ice cream went away. Well, Susie, the culprit isn't foreigners. It's global warming.
Global warming?
Yeah. Meet Mr. Sunbeam. He comes all the way from the sun to visit Earth.
Hello, Earth. Just popping in to brighten your day. La, 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 la. And now, I'll be on my way.
Not so fast, Sunbeam. We're greenhouse gases. You ain't going nowhere.
Oh, ah, oh, ah, oh, oh, God, it hurts.
Pretty soon, Earth is chock full of sunbeams. They're rotting corpses heating our atmosphere.
How do we get rid of the greenhouse gases?
Fortunately, our handsomest politicians came up with a cheap, last-minute way to combat global warming. Ever since 2063, we simply drop a giant ice cube into the ocean every now and then.
Just like Daddy puts in his drink every morning. And then he gets mad.
Of course, since the greenhouse gases are still building up, it takes more and more ice each time. Thus, solving the problem once and for all.
But...
once and for all!
Our daughter Kristen works with Matt Groening out in Hollywood, or did rather, and they allowed me to use that. I think it's a pretty good explanation of global warming, to tell you the truth. But the point is this, I really don't think there is any longer a credible basis for doubting that the Earth's atmosphere is heating up because of global warming. And I'd like to show just a few pictures that are different from today in New York City. You remember last summer in Europe when the heat wave was quite dramatic and the temperature increases, particularly in France, were extremely large and 10 degrees centigrade, higher than that Fahrenheit, of course, and a lot of people lost their lives as a result. And now they're calculating the estimates on a global basis of people that are casualties every year now because of global warming. And this is the temperature record since the Civil War, the last 140 years. And yes, decade to decade, it may go up or down in their variations, but the overall trend is pretty clear. And here are some pictures that I think are really pertinent to this discussion. Mount Kilimanjaro 30 years ago looked like this, and a couple years ago it looks like this. A friend of mine named Lonnie Thompson at Ohio State is the leading expert on mountain glaciers in the world, and he goes there every so often. It's melting rapidly. Here's Lonnie at the top of Kilimanjaro a couple years ago with a little sliver of a glacier that used to be enormous. And within 15 years now, it is projected there'll be no more ice and no more snows of Kilimanjaro. This is a glacier in Latin America, and 100 years ago it looked like this, and today it is gone. This is a glacier in China, which has gone through the same transition in a much shorter period of time. In Glacier National Park, 90 years ago, the Grinnell Glacier looked like this. With one of my daughters, I hiked to the top of it in 98. It looks like this now. 27 of the 38 glaciers in the park have now melted. This was a popular one earlier in the century, and now it's completely gone. And within 15 years, this could be called the park formerly known as Glacier. In fact, glaciers are melting everywhere in the world, with a few exceptions in Scandinavia. In Alaska, the Columbia Glacier used to have a vast extent and has now retreated dramatically. This glacier in Peru used to look like this. It now looks like this. This illustrates the well-known saying that denial ain't just a river in Egypt. Lonnie Thompson flies to the glaciers and travels in various ways, not just to watch them melt, but to have core drillings. And they dig down into the ice and pull it back up, and they study the little bubbles of atmosphere trapped in the ice, and they can measure the carbon dioxide and measure the temperature by looking at the different isotopes of oxygen, and they can read every year of the ice the way a forester reads tree rings. And Lonnie gave me this picture to illustrate why that's possible. Every single year there's a different layer, and he has dug down 1,000 years back in time and constructed 1,000-year record of global temperature as reflected in the glaciers. And 1,000 years ago is at the bottom, and the present day temperature is at the top. Now, I'm showing this to make a couple of points. Number one, the blue is cold and the red is warm. And some of the so-called skeptics have made a big point of saying, well, this is just a normal kind of fluctuation. And actually, there was a medieval warming period that was warmer than now. Well, no, that's not right. There it is, and another one. But compared to what it is today, it's completely different now. The other point is, it's really interesting. Glaciers do not care about politics. They don't respond to ideology or spin. They just melt or freeze. And so this record is really reliable. A few years back, these hikers were going across the Alps in Italy, and they said, wow, there's a 5,000-year-old man. Never noticed that guy before because the ice had never melted there before. Now, shifting gears, this is where most of the ice in the world is. 95% of all the fresh water on Earth is locked in the ice in Antarctica, and instead of going back 1,000 years, they can dig down through 10,000 feet of ice and go back 400,000 years. And recently, they completed the record of carbon dioxide and temperature going back all that way. This is what carbon dioxide looks like from the present time all the way back through the last ice age, through the next to last ice age, the period of great warming in between, and two more ice ages back to the down to the bottom of the Antarctic continent. And at no time in that whole 400,000 year period has it gotten above 300 parts per million or even 280 parts per million. And this is what the temperature record looks like. And there are two points to make on that. First of all, it sure does look like those lines go together. And the second point is, this is the difference in current temperatures in New York City and having a mile of ice over your head. Because that's what was above Manhattan at this point in time. Now, the current carbon dioxide concentrations are up here, way, way above anything that has been seen in 400,000 years. And midway through this century, unless we take prompt action, it will be here. Now, ask yourself this question. If this much difference on the cold side is a mile of ice over your head, how much, what does this represent on the warm side? And is that all right with everybody? Is that a perfectly sensible risk for us to take? Well, that's my answer also. According to the present administration, it's perfectly all right. No big deal. Shouldn't be worried about it. I think it's reckless in the extreme. And I think that it absolutely has to be addressed. We've all heard about these icebergs the size of Rhode Island breaking off of Antarctica. There have actually been a bunch of them in the last 7 or 8 years located in green. I'm going to show you a 6-week period in this in the Antarctic Peninsula just real fast. In 6 weeks, this is what happened 2 years ago. And that now happens on a regular basis. And at times in the very, very distant past, when large chunks of Antarctica plopped into the ocean, the sea level went up 23 feet all of a sudden. That's not in prospect for at least 150, 200 years, maybe more. However, when land-based ice melts, sea level does go up. And in the second largest place where land-based ice is found, in Greenland, Science Magazine published this picture just recently. That's rushing water melting in Greenland now. And the scientists are trying to come to grips with exactly what the pattern is there, but there's growing evidence of very dramatic melting and change in Greenland. When the ice melts on land, the sea level goes up. And in areas that are affected by it, they're beginning to take steps. This is London. In 1983, they built these barriers on the Thames River to protect London against rising sea levels in the form of tidal surges up the Thames River. And since 1983, this is what has happened in the number of closures every single year. The pattern is really clear. The change is underway right now, everywhere you look on Earth. The sea level increase is projected to displace 10 million environmental refugees in Bangladesh alone. It is also predicted to have a significant impact on Florida. And there are other, No. You be careful, I believe I carried Florida. Now, this is the Arctic, which is floating ice. When ice floating on the ocean melts, of course, the sea level doesn't go up. Like an ice cube in a glass of water, it melts, the water level doesn't change. But there are dramatic changes there as well. I went up to the Arctic a couple of times, and these submarines the Navy has specially designed for the Arctic, those bow wings rotate so that they'll push up like a knife cutting through the ice there. And the Navy agreed over a period of time to release their formerly secret data showing the ice thickness in the Arctic. It has decreased 40% in the last half century. It is decreasing 9% per decade now. And the reason it happened so rapidly, this is a NASA illustration. When the edge of the ice melts, the water heats up and it reinforces and gives a positive feedback and accelerates the melting at the edge of the ice. And that phenomena means that there is a much faster process of warming in the Arctic than anywhere else. Alaskan temperatures have already gone up 8 degrees, and the 40% decline in the thickness of the Arctic ice pack unfortunately is continuing, and the projection by some scientists now is that midway through this century, this loss of 1.5 million square kilometers of sea ice will continue, and unless action is taken boldly and soon, then partway through this century, we may well see, according to the predictions, the complete disappearance in summertime of the Arctic ice cap. Now, here's the reason why that's a big deal. When it's there, it's like a big mirror, and 95% of the sun's energy bounces off it. And when it's gone, 90% of the sun's energy is absorbed. So that means a 1 degree increase at the equator is projected to be as much as a 12-degree increase at the top of the world. And since the global climate system is an engine for redistributing heat from the equator to the poles, and since that pattern of ocean currents and jet streams and storm systems is defined in part by the difference between these two temperature extremes. You replace that mirror with a big heat sink, then it threatens massive disruption of the entire pattern of global climate. In any case, that puts more energy into the climate system. That's why the scientists say that storms get 50% stronger and hurricanes get bigger and precipitation increases because there's more evaporation off of the oceans, both in the form of rain and snow. In this century alone, in North America, there has been a huge increase in precipitation. But the same phenomena that causes the extra evaporation off the oceans also causes evaporation of soil moisture. And the projection now is that we could lose in North America 25 to 30% of the soil moisture in the most valuable agricultural growing areas of this country. And now the scientists are backing up and they're saying, hey, wait a minute. We've been saying CO2 may double in the atmosphere. If the current policies prevail and nothing is done, we'll just go barreling right through a doubling and head toward a quadrupling, which according to the scientific community would lead to a catastrophic 60% loss of soil moisture throughout vast areas of North America. You talk about a scorched earth policy, that is exactly and literally what that is. This is also the moisture also comes, according to the scientists, much more now in the big one-time storm events, so it doesn't recharge the aquifers and the springs, it just rushes off. So that's why so many areas are getting more flooding and more droughts simultaneously. Not a good thing. This also has captured the attention of the insurance industry because of real hard dollars and cents. Not all of this is due to the great weather and flood catastrophes, because there are more people living in floodplains and in vulnerable areas, but a great deal of it is due to it. And that's why you have companies like Swiss Re and Munich Re just almost apoplectic about this issue, attempting to convince others in the business community that it's time to say, hey, wait a minute. You talk about the cost of dealing with the transition to new technologies. It's time to also take into account the cost of not doing anything about this, which would be just unthinkable. So the point is this. The evidence is overwhelming and undeniable. Global warming is real. It is happening now. The consequences that are presently anticipated are totally unacceptable. Now, it is important to understand, in my opinion, that this crisis actually is just a symptom of a deeper underlying cause. Global warming, just like the destruction of the rainforest and the other global environmental issues, is actually a symptom of this fact that we are witnessing a collision between our civilization and the Earth, and the three factors that are responsible for it, and the first one is population. We're seeing some success in slowing the momentum of population growth, but it is still growing rapidly all around the world. And if you look at a graph of population from the beginning of the human race until now, if you go back, now I don't want to get into a debate about when we had a trial in Tennessee about this, and we lost, and I'm very sensitive about it, but for purposes of argument, if you accept the scientific view that we emerged in our current form 160,000 years ago, it took more than 10,000 generations before we reached a population of 2 billion people when my baby boom generation was born. And in my 55 years, it's gone from 2 billion to 6.3 billion, and it's projected to continue going on up. Maybe it'll level off at 8.9 billion. There has been some success. But the point is this. Do you notice anything different about this part of the trend line here? What's going on now in our lifetimes is completely and totally different from anything that has ever happened in all of human history. And this pattern is also responsible for driving some other patterns, such as the loss of living species. The rate of extinction now is 1,000 times greater than the background rate of extinction. Some of you saw the study that came out last week, printed in Nature magazine, peer-reviewed, that now they expect 25% of all living species to disappear in the next 50 years unless action is taken, and up to 37%. Nothing like that's happened since 65 million years ago when the dinosaurs were wiped out. And this time it's not a collision with an asteroid, it's a collision with us. So the population is, of course, mostly increasing in the developing nations, and that drives increasing demand for food and for water and for energy, and also is responsible for some of the destruction of the forest land where it's cut and is burned on just a constant basis. They say about a football field's worth every second is lost, drying out the land, and it is a political decision. This is the border between Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Haiti has one policy, Dominican Republic has another policy. We have political decisions to make also, because this is where the greenhouse gases are coming from. In our country, we're responsible for more than South America and Africa and the Middle East and China all put together. And the average greenhouse gas emission per person in the world is down there, and this is how we stack up compared to the rest of the world. So it is a challenge for us. Well, here's 1,000 years of carbon emissions and CO2 and temperature. This is not rocket science. These correlations are pretty darn obvious.